Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of the Married Men Don't Talk Show. I'm your host, Darren Smith. Joining me is my co-host, Rodney Turner. Tonight is another interesting topic that men, we do every day. We go through, we think about, and some of us has gone through it. But before we get started, I want to go over a few rules. One of the rules are no cursing, no profanity. It's a fluid conversation. We're not going to go over Bible study. But if we have to go there, it's understandable that we will, you know, because we know God is the author of marriage. So, but if anybody have any questions, just jump right in. And if not, we're going to jump right into this subject. The name of the subject, the topic tonight is, when did you know it was over? Now, the reason why this subject is so important, because we got to understand that that we have to walk into something. When we're walking into something, we got to know that we're walking down the wrong path. We're walking down the wrong street, and we need to cut that out. You know, we need to understand that this is not the right path. This is not the right conversation I need to be having with this woman or with this man. And some of us has been, this is our second marriage, me included and myself. My first marriage, I did not know it was over, but I seen hints that it was over. And I know if anybody else care to share, before we get started on these questions, if they care to share about when they knew it was over with their first relationship, we can give you the floor right now. Anybody care to share?
Well, I could say this. Good afternoon, fellas. How's everybody doing?
Good evening, good evening.
What's going on, man?
All right.
Hey, okay. What's up, Chris?
Not much, man. Just fighting the cold.
Okay, okay. Glad you can make it.
Yes, sir. But, you know, with a lot of times, we know relationships are over before they start. But we think that we can transition or change people to conform to what we want in a person. And then once we realize that, we like, oh, man, this ain't going to work. Forget it. But, you know, wasted 6-7 months of your life at that point.
Right. So what are some signs did you recognize as, okay, this is not going to work?
Communication is down. Interaction overall is down.
Okay. The communication, you know, a lot of people say communication, but I think it goes beyond that. I think it goes beyond to the point to know that, you know, if you don't want to talk to her. Some people got poor communication skills, but they still will communicate. They won't shut down, but they just communicate poorly. And, you know, the communication that I had with my ex, it was communication. It was just poor communication, meaning that I didn't want to communicate because I just felt that it was going to go down a path of arguments. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's what caused me to research. And I dive right into the show. I go out looking for stuff, looking to talk to men. I happened to go to another conference. Matter of fact, Chris invited me to a domestic violence talk with some other fellas. And, you know, and domestic violence is one of the greatest reason when you know it's over. But some kind of way, men and women still do it. Now, according to this article on yourtango.com, it's 5 marriage mistakes that lead to divorces, and that are cheating, dishonesty, addictions, abuse, and a major change in priorities. Now, out of all of them, the major change in priorities, it's the most dangerous one because it's the gray area that allows irreconcilable differences. So what are some priority changes that are made by your wife that will lead your marriage down a downward spiral?
Kids.
I.e. child focus. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. That's what I said, kids, because, you know, unfortunately, and I do have some sympathy and empathy towards women because it is a difficult balance, you know, to be the wife and the nurturer. And they have to make a point to set their mind to being a good wife and make sure that is the priority. You know, now we all know, most of us, if not all of us, we've all had children and we've been through sleepless nights and, you know, all of that good stuff. I have a 1.5-year-old and I still, unfortunately, go through that every now and again. But, you know, he's gotten a lot better. However, you know, we have to be sensitive to that, but at the same time, you know, women, they struggle with prioritizing, you know, who's important, you know, and again, you know, I do have some sympathy and empathy, you know, towards women because they have to wear a lot of different hats, you know, with the whole motherhood and the wife thing, but, you know, the key is that they have to keep their focus, they have to keep their priority that, you know, in the ideal situation, you know, she became a wife before she became a mother, and in that order, you know, so I think she has to keep, you know, keep that in mind, you know, but it's tough. It's tough. Easier said than done.
Well, what kind of communication do you have with her to not seem so selfish when it comes down to, hey, babe, you're paying more attention to our 2-year-old son than you paying to me being, you know, 35 years old? I mean, how do you communicate that to her without sounding so selfish?
I think you have to be sensitive and, you know, and all, as I always say, it has to be the right timing. And, you know, the way you said it may not be the best way. I would say that probably say you use the I word, like I feel, you know, this is how I feel, that you're spending more time with the toddler than me, or more focus on, you know, the toddler than me. And, you know, just kind of, because perception is reality. So, you know, just kind of, what you said earlier was key, is that you have to communicate it, you know, and unfortunately, you know, it's a hard conversation to have. So, unfortunately, we try to avoid that, you know, at all costs. But it's a conversation that has to be had, but it has to be had at the right time, you know, and with the right words, you know, and again, just being sensitive to the fact that, you know, your wife is juggling a lot of roles and, you know, not that that's an excuse, but just being sensitive to that and try to craft your words, you know, correctly, just so she can feel how you're feeling, you know, because kids, you know, when kids are involved, it changes the dynamics of the marriage quickly.
Yeah, but like I said, said what I stated before was what she's hearing. Even though you sweeten it up and talk all smooth and communicate with her properly, only thing she hears is, I want to be taken care of as a 35-year-old man before you take care of our 2-year-old child. No matter how you communicate it, the only thing that she hears is that when she's frustrated or in a position where she's doing all she can, and then here come Mr. 35-year-old baby in the room. You see what I'm saying? That's how she perceives the conversation.
True. I feel you on that.
You see, so it's not a good way to communicate, baby, I need some attention. Or if you go to touch her after she's been working, cleaning, and bathing kids all day, she's like, oh, I know you ain't trying to get none, you know. After all the work that I done did, you know, you didn't lift one finger to help me.
And that's the key is that, you know, we, again, being sensitive to what they're going through, help out, you know, and do a little bit more with the kids. You know, maybe you take over the bath time routines, or, you know, whatever it is that has to be done, whether it be homework or, you know, because guarantee you, and I mean, if that's something that she's been doing and she no longer has to do, your sheet's going to warm up, period. You know, if you take it over and put the kids to bed, or you take care of the homework, or pack the lunches, or, you know, all of these menial things, household chores that have to be done every day, you know, if you start taking over that responsibility and lighten her load, you know, she'll tighten you up. That's,
well,
since, you
But since we're talking about kids, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just said I actually agree with that. I was in a 7-year relationship with a person. We had 2 kids together, and I noticed the more involved and interactive I was with the kids, the more she was open to doing different things, even tightening me up.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, because I mean, she's less stressed, she's less tired. You know, the I got a headache. You know, kind of. It's like, why you got a headache? I got the kids' homework done. I packed their lunches and I put them in bed. What's your problem? You know, those excuses. You know, she could still literally have a headache. I'm not saying that, but those excuses can tend to go out the window.
Right. Well, while we're on kids, let's stay on that for a second. When do you know it's over? What kind of involvement do the kids have to the ending of the marriage?
Man. Wow. I think you were supposed to say that you got a monkey wrench, you know.
Well,
that's the one before you ask that question.
I'm going to tell you something. This is more normal than you know, bro. A lot of people blame their marriage or the ending of their marriage because of the children. And I'm going to tell you, you know, it's in my family. I'm going through a situation right now with my mom and my sister, but my mom think my sister broke their marriage up. Because when my mom is out bowling, you know, when she got my sister up to a certain age, she was like, okay, I'm out. I'm going bowling. I'm going to school at night. I'm trying to do me. Well, my stepdad, he stayed in there with us. He made sure we had our homework. He made sure we went to work. He made sure we did everything we were supposed to do. And as my mom continued to go out, I left the house. And my sister and my dad got closer and closer and closer together as a parent child would get closer and closer together. Well, since my mom stayed gone for so long, the next time she looked up, my sister had breasts in the butt. And now she's not all of a sudden a little child. She's now another woman in the house. So now when my mom comes back to the house, it's like, the relationship dynamics changed within all 3 of them, meaning my mom didn't know how to relate to my sister, and she looked at her as another woman trying to take her husband. As sick as that may sound, you absent yourself from your household, you come back, and it's totally rearranged. It's really the same. It's just people grew up, you know.
That's deep.
You know, this is something that and she contributes the ending of the marriage to my sister and my dad's relationship as being too close.
Wow.
You see? So children have a major factor, or can have a major. That's just one incident where children had a factor to break up a marriage when they knew it was over. I knew it was over in my mom and my dad's relationship when she came back home, and I came back home, and I saw my sister, how fine she was. I mean, I'm allowed to say my sister, she was a model, and she was a fine young lady. And she was in Barbizon, and she was in all these things. And my mom saw the same thing, and I was like, Mom, why are you looking at? I mean, it's okay to say you got a good-looking daughter. It's okay to say I got a fine sister, but don't contaminate the relationship by cheapening what my dad is doing as being a father, and you trying to cheapen it to say he's doing this or doing that. Anybody else know of any relationship that ended or dissolved because of the children? I think it often
happens. Hey, how y'all doing? Now, this is Malcolm.
What's up, Malcolm?
What up, bro?
I think that it often dissolves when it's a blended family more so than same parents, like a stepchild. I don't like what you just explained. I think people stay together because of kids more so than leave. But if it is a situation where the kids break the relationship up, it's because, you know, it's of stepchildren. You know, somebody brought a kid in, or both of y'all brought a kid in. I think that's more prone to break up a marriage than natural children.
Yeah, well, my dad, he didn't, when I asked him, he did not know it was over because of what my mom thought it was over with. He thought it was over because he was already planning his exit strategy when my brother got 18 years old and was on his own. So some people, when you say they stay together because of kids, that's still temporal because they just waiting on the kids to get old enough so nobody wanted to pay no child support.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm saying it prolongs the breakup. I'm not saying that it keep them together for life. Like, say if you have a kid and, you know, you and your wife have three kids and they're, like, under 10 or something, you might stay or the last one is 18, even though if you didn't have children, the marriage would have been long done. Kids probably keep parents together more so than break them up.
Yeah, and that's the point. You know, that brother brings up a good point because what if your marriage – you know, it's functionally like, you know, you're just living together, but the relationship, the marital relationship is long over. You know, and in that case, you know, what do you do? You know, do you file for divorce? And I'm talking about when you got kids, you know, still kids in the house. I mean, the relationship is over, but, I mean, do you file for divorce or do you continue to, you know, go through the motions? You know, to keep up the facade. Like what, you know, because, and why I ask that question is because how do the children, knowing that mommy and daddy ain't happy, children can tell. You know, I've told many stories about my children, how they can tell when we're having a little argument or a disagreement, you know, but don't get it twisted. Children can absolutely tell. So, what in that situation would it be healthier for the children if somebody just files the divorce papers versus continuing to just go through the motions like y'all happily married when you really know it's not like that? Like what would you suggest?
I'd suggest what I did, what was best for me, you know. When I broke up with my kid's mom, when I filed for the divorce because of infidelity. Now, once I did that, I was doing my objective was to have peace. I know that if I was in that house, if I remained in that relationship, the kids would grow up to see a functional dysfunction.
Mm.
And when they are to go into their relationships, they're going to see, you know, kids already have an idea of what they want just by looking at their parents' relationship. I knew when I was growing up and I heard my parents fussing about money, my decision was made right then. Just give her all the money and she'll shut up. Well, that's not true. It's not that easy. I just thought that if he just give her control of the money, she would have nothing to argue about. Well, I didn't want my children to look at us argue because the longer we stayed together, my son gained weight. Their grades started slipping because they heard all the things that was going on, even though I was trying to keep the noise down. I was trying to calm her down when she got too excited. I was trying to, you know, stay gone, you know, stay at work. And I even started going to school just, you know, on top of work just so I won't have to come home so I can argue with her. You know, but the children know, but it affects them. So I was like, well, look, they're going to have to grow callous either way. It's more healthy for me to leave this relationship than to stay because of them.
Mm.
So you have to make a decision, and it's tough either way. If you stay, they're going to learn what they don't want in a relationship. If you go, one of you guys are going to be absent, and they're going to hate whoever you get with. So you got to choose the lesser of the two evils. You got to, you know, roll the dice and figure out, hey, you know, I'm going to let the spades fall where they may. You know, and it was tough, and it's still tough, because a second marriage, I think, is designed by the enemy to possibly have the best possible solution to get a divorce because of the kids. Oh, I hate her. I don't like her. She's not my mother. He's not my father. You know, talking back. You know, just doing devious things. My kids even put, when we first got together, my daughter didn't like my wife so much that she put dish detergent in her coffee and stirred it up.
What?
Told it was honey. Yeah, it gets evil, bro. It gets really, because the children, in their mind, if I like this stepmother, then I'm disrespecting my real mother. So I'm going to do something to show my real mother that I got her back, even though dad is making me call her mom, even though that wasn't the case. But that's what goes on in a child's mind. So it's dangerous either way. You know, so that those kind of things, and when my wife come to me and say, your cute little daughter did this to me as a father, knowing that I'm raising her, is saying, no, she wouldn't do that. That's not how I raise her. So now I got a problem, well, my wife got a problem with me because I don't believe her.
Mm.
Or she feels that I don't believe her. So here's a tug of war. You know, it was almost over, you know, at that point, because she had to literally get them on film or get them on camera and get them on audio just so I can believe some of the things that she was saying that they would say when I'm not there.
Mm. And you say going back to your first marriage, you say that there was infidelity. Was the infidelity on, you know, your part, her part, or both?
No, she I was in the Navy, you know, she found other interests, you know, in other people, you know, that way in another person. And I've always told her, you know, just don't disrespect me and sleep with somebody. Just tell me that you don't want me anymore and I respect you more. So she came and she told me, I don't want you no more. I said, oh, wow, okay. I guess it's over.
That made it easy.
Yeah, that made it easy for me because she just told me what it was.
So did she
and
file
said, okay,
a divorce?
You know,
on, did she file the divorce on you, or you filed the divorce papers, you know, for her? Like, once she said that, did she have like divorce papers, divorce lawyer in the corner pocket, or did you still have to go and actually file the official paperwork?
No, I say I filed because I filed second. She filed first. And since she had a legal aid lawyer, I was willing to give her everything that she asked for if she wasn't going to take all my money. So I thought I was going to do it outside the courts. It would be simpler that way. Nobody would be out of money. But since she had a legal aid lawyer, which was free, I said, well, just tell him to type this. I'll give you $30,000, and, you know, I'll pay you child support, but just don't hit me over the head. And she put some slick stuff in there after she got that $30,000. She put some slick stuff in there trying to slick me. She agreed that I would pay $700 a month since she was going to be down in Georgia, and I'm living up here in Maryland. But the second line said $700 a month or Georgia-regulated child support for two children, whichever is greater. And I think she thought I was going to skip that part. You know, I think she thought I was just going to not read it, you know, and sign it and send it back and then just get beat up over the head. But I didn't do that. So then that's when I had to go file my own divorce, you know, my own papers and say, hey, I'm divorcing her. So because of infidelity. If you're just divorcing because of irreconcilable differences, then anybody can file. But if it was an act committed or, you know, some injustice committed, then the person who got that done to them, they have to file that paperwork. So I had to go file secondly. And I had to file for what I wanted. Like, I want the kids, and I want you to pay child support, and I want them to live up here with me. So, you know, but it wasn't easy either way. When they go down there, they give her boyfriends crap. And when they come up here, they give my wife crap. So with the children in their mind, they thinking more so of loyalty than making my parents happy. Or if my mom and my dad is happy, then I'm happy for them. They don't think like that, you know. So, but moving on to the next subject is sometimes people break up because of religious matters. Going to a certain church because someone has found Christ and the other one don't want to get out of the clubs yet. Anybody familiar with that?
Yeah, church broke up my first marriage.
Okay. You want to talk about that, Ike?
Yeah, sure. And, you know, I was saved. You know, we both saved, so we both going to church. But I don't know, something was definitely off about my wife, my ex-wife at the time. There was going to church, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday. Okay, cool, I did that. But then I started noticing, okay, now church people in my house cleaning my house. Church people are in my house going through my things. And church people know exactly how the money in my house is being spent. And then the next thing I noticed was every time we get a certain amount in savings, the church people would come up and say, hey, we need this money for savings. And I went to Korea for a year while I was in the military. And this is my wife. My ex-wife went to probably, I don't know, about four different churches. So it's amazing. Four different churches, all of them had the same MO. I don't know if they could spot a sucker or what. But while I was in Korea, you know, they told her, you know, your husband's cheating on you. We got a man for you right here. You want to marry him. So when I came back from Korea, I talked to the church elder. It was four men in the house with one woman and three children. And the oldest man was the church elder. So I pulled him off to the side, and I said, okay, because, you know, he was saying before, because I had orders to North Carolina. And he said, well, before you can go to North Carolina, I have to give you a blessing in order to, you know, release, you know, your wife to you. And I said, okay, look, man, you can spare me all that crap. How much? And, you know, he told me, just look me in the eye, I said, about $2,400. So, you know, I paid the man. And, you know, gave him some items in our house. And he finally gave us the, quote-unquote, blessing prayer to move to North Carolina. And all of that I went through, I was still trying to get her pregnant. So I went through what I went through in Korea, got back home, paid the ransom, moved to North Carolina, get to North Carolina. And, you know, I got all these signs, all these things going on. Always emptying my bank account. I'm still trying to make it work. And we get pregnant, but, you know, we lose the baby. And then really kind of told me it was over when she blamed me for losing the baby. That was my fault. That was all me. And so at that point, you know, the final phases start happening, you know, where you're not having sex anymore, you know, you ain't having sex, you ain't in the house, you know, I purposely stay away from home so I ain't got to see her, or when I do come home, you know, take one step in the house, take one look at me, turn around and walk out, you know, and I don't even ask where she's been, you know, by that time, in that phase, and, you know, that was it.
What was amazing about what you just said was when you got, after all of that was over, you still tried to get her pregnant.
I know.
Yeah.
I had so many signs, you know, and you know from the beginning, but you just ignore it, you know, but I didn't care, you know. I guess I was trying to prove a point to my mom and to my boys and everybody, like, nah, this is the woman I need to be with. But it was nine. It was 9 years. It was nine. It was, let's see. We were married for 9 years. Seven of them 9 years was hell.
Well, I had a conversation with my man earlier today. I don't know if he want to talk about it or not. I went and saw Malcolm today, and we had a conversation about, is a man really in love with his wife, or does he just love her? And we was trying to determine the difference between the two. And if anybody want to chime in, I'll let you know what the solutions was at the end of after you guys finish.
Say that question again.
What is the difference? Because the question came up of, is a man in love with a woman? Or does he love a woman? Or can a man be in love with his woman? Because I know the woman can be in love with the man. That's scriptural. But it's not stated that a man, it's not stated that it's reciprocated. So, and we explored that a little bit in our own relationships as me and him talked to get together today. So does anybody else want to explain or try to explain the difference if they're in love, do they feel like they're in love with their wife or do they just love their wife? Because what I just said, I don't know if that kind of love will exist again because of what he went through the first time.
Well, can I personally don't ever think I've been in love, but I think when you talk about the act of being in love, it's that agape that I'll do anything, you know. It's no matter what happens, we're going to make it work, you know, kids, no kids, car wreck, burnt dinner, you know, maybe even infidelity. No matter what, we're going to make it work because that's unsurpassed. I don't know if I'm making sense or not.
Well, that's, I think that's the first love. Rodney did a show a couple of months ago about your first love. And I listened to that show and I tried to look at my own life as we were all talking, and as I talked to my man Malcolm today, we was like, you know, what is the first love, the first wife? Let's say the first wife. The second or third or fifth wife would not ever get the love and the amount of respect that the first wife has got ever gotten because, you know, once you turn over some stones, it's hard to turn those stones back over because of trust issues with women, with the whole race. And it, even though it's not your wife's fault, your current wife's fault, it's just the fact that you've been done in before. So you're scared to trust again on that level, even though you say you trust on that level. I don't know if it ever actually gets there. Y'all agree?
You know, I hear what you're saying. And early on after my first divorce, after my divorce, I probably would be more on board with what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But what happened to me was I realized that I had to love myself first.
Right.
You know, I had to have some type of respect for myself first because I looked at myself in that first marriage and I was a man that had absolutely no respect for himself, you know, no love for himself to allow himself to be in those situations, you know, to not be more active in changing those situations or letting someone know, hey, you can't treat me this way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not, and you, just because you feel like you're this or you're that or some elder or pastor done told you this, no, you still have to respect me. I'm your husband.
Right, right.
See, I never had that conversation with her, but mm-hmm. I had that conversation now. And I don't have any problems.
Did you, when you was looking for a second wife, did you want some things that you had in your first wife to be in your second wife? Did you want certain things to mirror, or did you want something totally different? Like, you know, some brothers, they say, you know, look, I had a sister, man, I'm just going all the way white because the whole race just disgraced me. I done talked to some brothers like that. So what changed from your first wife to your second wife as far as?
The only thing that I wanted to be like my first wife was just her to be a woman. That was pretty much the only similarity I was looking for. Everything else is just a totally different person. Sure, she may have one or two traits here like my ex-wife, but just the frequency and the timing is different. It's just a totally different person. And I wasn't looking for anything to be like my ex-wife. Now, what I did do, I married my mom.
Okay. That's what
my current wife is exactly like me. They birthdays are 8 days apart. What you think? Who you think I got more of a closer bond to? You know, who you think I can relate to better?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I could sit both of them in front of me and say one way and say one thing, one sentence, and I can predict how both of them are going to react.
I'm going to react. Wow.
Going to react the same.
Man. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the things, and anybody can answer, what are some of the things that attracted you to your wife that is not even a factor now? Because this is another thing that starts a down spiral to a divorce, to something that you don't really want to be involved. There's something that caused you to go to the other room, to start sleeping in the other room. So what are some things that are in your wife, that attracted you to your wife, that are not even a factor now, that it's kind of like you're disinterested in it? You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I'm not disinterested in it, but I'm gonna jump out there and say sex.
Okay.
When I got with my current wife, you know, she was still at the height of her sexual peak. Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And you know, after we had gotten married, you know, she had made some comments to y'all. I've shared with you all on the call. So I began to work out and get in shape to build up my sexual performance. Well, lo and behold, while I'm working on building up my sexual performance, she's now going through perimenopause.
Mm-hmm.
So her sexual performance is now on the downslope. So now I'm waiting on her to peak back up to get to the, you know, elite cougar status. You see what I'm saying? You see what I'm saying? So basically all I'm saying is the frequency is not as much as it was when we first got together, but it's not something that I'm going to, you know, I'm not going to ding her for that, because it's just natural for a woman's body to go through that change.
Yes,
that's nothing
right.
That she can
yeah.
help. It wasn't because of diet like that.
Say again?
In a relationship, like when you first get with somebody, y'all hit it 2-3 times a week, twice a day, and over time, that part fades out anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's just the newness, you know, that new, that monkey, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's natural. I mean, you know, you get a new car, you know, you're just going to drive that around the block, you know.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then after a while, you don't even want to wash that junk.
Right.
I need air in them and everything. Need oil change. Don't even care.
Wow, it reminds me of a sermon I once gave called "What Happened to the Love," talking about how when you first got saved, you used to read your Bible every day. Now you don't even pick it up. You know, I'm saying, when you first gave your life over, you would call people and pray for people, and now people call you, you just push reject. Yeah, but yeah, you know what happened to the love. I understand, bro.
And that goes around this question, you know, certain things that used to be a factor. You know, Ike said sex. Anybody else want to share? Some things that were turned on. I think we were talking about this before the call started tonight. You know, I am a breast man, and by my wife having breast cancer and her having a double mastectomy, I had to change my mind frame very, very quickly, or she was going to notice some things that was unattractive in my eyes when she saw me look at her. So, you know, I had to grow up real quick. You know, I mean, I couldn't, you know, run around like a little boy. Ooh, look at Ozona, you know. As when we were younger males, you know, we'd look at that. Oh, look at that butt, you know, look at that, you know, all the physical features. Now, once they're gone, you know, it had to quickly be a non-factor in a relationship. Quickly be a non-factor. And I can attribute this group of people to helping me get over that hump. So, well, I should have said that for the end. But that I have to get that out, because that is why we come here every Tuesday night, to help and assist each other in helping us, you know, get to that next level in our relationship. You know. And one thing I did in my first marriage, that my first ex-wife, well, my ex-wife did, she didn't even know or realize when I was hurting. That's one thing this wife knows. She knows when my heart is broken. She knows when I have a shift in my mood, and that's attractive to me, and I hang on closer to that. You know, so do any of y'all wives understand when she's even breaking your heart? Has it been even communicated to her? You know that, hey, you broke my heart. My heart is hurting. You shouldn't have did that to me. You know, are we too much of a wimp to even tell our wives that, you know, that we're hurting? Because I think that I held my feelings in a lot, you know, especially when I would walk up to her and ask her or try to kiss her before I left. And she'll turn, instead of turning her lips towards me, she'll turn her cheek towards me and kind of back up a little bit, like, you know, why are you always kissing on me? You know, I think she even asked me that one time, why are you so touchy-feely? And that kind of hurt my feelings, you know. So, and she didn't even, I don't think she cared. It didn't seem like it. But that kind of hurt my feelings, and I carried that out or throughout the day when I left to go to work. Do y'all get sentimental like me, or am I the only one?
No, we all do. I just want to admit it. Go ahead, bro.
That has more to do with love languages. You know, you're a touchy-feely person. Your wife's not a touchy-feely person. There has to be a middle ground found. I mean, if my primary love language is physical touch, I love to be touched, catered to, held, comforted, cradled, you know, whatever term you want to apply to it. But a lot of the females that I've come across, even in my previous marriages, weren't like that. And it was an adjustment to me, not something that I carried around, but something that I quickly learned and said, okay, I'm going to have to prompt them. If I want to be touched, I'm going to have to say, hey, touch me. And I think over time, they learned, but it was still an adjustment, a major adjustment for me.
So how do you communicate that without seeming like you're being a punk, you know, without seeming like you, you know, you're whining, or you're sensitive, or you're, you know, feminine? You know what I mean? How do you communicate to your wife or your significant other that, you know, hey, I'm hurting? Because men don't say that. Men do not admit, especially to someone that they're so vulnerable to, that they are hurting.
Well,
I think the first time I admitted that I was ever hurting was on this show.
Oh.
So how do you communicate this? You know, it's easy to say, oh, yeah, all you got to do is communicate. All you got to do is communicate with your wife. Just tell her, you know. But how do you tell a woman that your sensitive side needs her attention?
A book, a video. You make it a couple's activity. Buy a book and say, let's read together. Or you buy a video, let's watch this documentary together. And through the communication process, book, video, she learns that, oh, this is why he's like that, if she's paying attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I mean, I don't know, man. That is, you know, that's easier said than done, is all I'm saying.
Hey, D, you know something, man? One thing is that, in my opinion, if you have to go that far and you have to actually tell her, if your gestures aren't enough and you have to make it clear as day, I think a woman generally is sensitive to a man when she's feeling him. It's because she's, in my opinion, it's because if it's a woman, it's because she's just not feeling you. That's why she's operating that way. If you literally have to say the words to her that I'm her, if she can't pick up on the gestures that you've been putting out for the 7 months before you get to the point where you have to make it clear, she's just not feeling you, in my opinion.
True that. True that. Mm.
That's the truth right there.
Mm. Real talk.
Yeah.
And if it's getting to that point, in my opinion, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier today, too. If it gets to the point where you're going to go to the level of actually telling her you're hurting, she got the upper hand, too. It's almost like that first girlfriend that you had, like we were talking about earlier today, and you just don't know how to deal with women.
Yeah.
You know.
But that's so amazing because, you know, when I was in my first marriage, you know, I didn't understand. It was a state of confusion that I was in to the why of all of a sudden she left or all of a sudden she wanted to be with somebody else. It was an all of a sudden moment to me. But to her, it seemed like it was well planned, but the confusion and state of not depression, but my state of mind was what did I do wrong? You know, you got these questions in your mind that's connected to your sensitive side. Whether she's feeling you or not, you have to figure out, because men, we're thinkers, we're fixers, we try to, it's like, okay, well, if that didn't work the first time, I'm going to make sure I don't do that the second time in the second marriage. But what was happening was I didn't know what I did wrong to fix it. So since I didn't know what I did wrong to fix it, I was in a state of confusion.
In my opinion, I think it was Rodney who said it. That's because you didn't have enough, in my opinion, enough self-confidence. You knew you didn't do nothing wrong, so you couldn't be sitting up there really questioning, like, what did I do? Or you wouldn't be sitting up there questioning what I did wrong when you know you didn't do nothing wrong.
But
cheated and you wasn't sure if she knew or not.
Right.
Yeah. But in a man's mind, even though you feel like, well, I didn't do nothing wrong to her, and then he's like, well, why are you getting a divorce after 10 years? Why would she leave you a perfectly good marriage? Because it can't be perfectly good, because if it was perfectly good, then she wouldn't leave. That's what the strategy is. He's like, well, wait a minute. It just makes perfect sense. Why is she leaving if it's a perfectly good marriage? So that frustration will cause you to, you know, act certain ways when it comes to certain things, meaning that when I got my second wife, my mother would ask me certain questions, and I kept saying, well, I don't know, and she would say certain things. She's trying to use you. She's just trying to talk about referring to my ex-wife. Oh, you still in love with her. That's the one that used to push my button, because mm-hmm. I used to go off thinking, like, and the only thing I was thinking about was, man, well, I don't want to make the same mistake with this woman, but I got to figure out what the mistake was so I won't make it. But I'm lost for words because I don't know what I did. So when I go into those moments and those thought moments, and my mom see me, or my current wife, she used to see me. My mom used to just say, you know, you still in love with your ex-wife. Go on back to your ex-wife because you know you in love with her. And that used to just makes me more mad and make it now seem like I'm in love with her because I'm the way I'm reacting. I'm like, no, what are you talking about? And, you know, it was more frustration because I didn't know when it was over. I just didn't know when it was over. And and when you can't put your finger on it, it kind of leaves you in the path of, I don't know, you know, it leaves you down the path of, you know, uncertainty.
Yeah.
You just don't want to do it again.
And what you just said, you know, could it be, you know, the age-old question is, how do you know she was the one? And it's often, you know, hard to articulate that. So, you know, the whole question, you know, that we ask, you know, here tonight, when did you know it was over? I mean, is it, I mean, could, are they analogous, you know, the whole how do you know she was the one, you know, or when do you know she's the one versus, you know, when do you know it was, when did you know it was over? I mean, are those, do those two ideals, you know, have some similarities, I guess is what I'm asking, because it's hard to articulate.
I don't, it was very hard to articulate, but I came up with the assumption that it was, it's two kind of people in this world or in your life. And one person is seasonal and the other one is permanent. And sometimes we get them twisted. Sometimes we marry the seasonal person. And we let go the permanent person. So the person that was supposed to be your wife or the person that's supposed to be your wife that you ain't met yet, you done married the seasonal person already, and you don't realize it, but now you're stuck because you in the marriage. You just can't say, hey, I'm out of here. I done found the permanent person I'm supposed to be with, and, you know, you can't do that. So the conclusion that I came up with, this was a person that was seasonal. Yeah, she broke my virginity, and I thought, well, if she broke my virginity, we going to be married, you know. And I should have hung out with a lot of my homeboys. They're like, hey, man, I'm out here to crack virginity. They ain't out here to break mine. I'm out here to break them, you know. But that's not healthy either. So I was trying to go down a different path, but that path only led her to even think that, hey, well, you know, this is some different things out here, and that path led her down to curiosity about other men, other sizes, other types, you know. And I just found out, you know, I wasn't supposed to be with a seasonal person. And that leads me to my question of, is your wife a seasonal wife? If y'all are brave enough to admit it, do you think you married the right one? Or do you think somebody, did you marry the convenient one?
Can I raise my hand?
Go ahead.
His hand is raised.
This is actually interesting because in 96, I met a young lady who I believe was supposed to be the one I married. And the reason I say that is because surrounding all the abuse that I had in my life, she was in the middle. I did it before her, and I did it after her, but never did it to her. And we were together for quite some time, but I had immaturity issues at the time. Like, she made more than me, so I was uncomfortable with that. You know,
she made more money than you at the time?
She made a lot more money than me at the time.
Okay, okay.
You know, like, she had a client's job before a client's jobs were big. You know, so it was factors like that. I mean, she made more money. She was more outgoing, more aggressive about life. She knew what she wanted and what direction she was going in while I was still trying to figure all that out.
So, well, that's, see, and I'm not throwing sticks at you, but she could have saw you as a seasonal person because she could have been like, well, the man that I want, he's going to have equal or greater than I.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
I do.
You're saying it from a perspective of, you know, hey, she had everything. She made more money than me. I was living in her house. I mean, I don't know the particulars, but it could have been a convenient thing for you, man. This girl got it going on, and they ain't letting her go.
Right. I mean, whenever I needed something, she was there. One Christmas, she brought me $700 worth of suits because she'd like to see me suit up.
She used to buy you clothes, too?
Yeah, she used to buy me everything. I mean, took care of me. And I had a full-time job.
So you let her go, you saying?
Well, no, she eventually walked away from me because I wasn't trying to step up.
Okay.
But I wasn't ever in a position where I had to step up before. I never had that male structure that said to me, this is what you do. So
right.
I pretty much just slacked the whole time.
Okay. Wow. So she the one pulled the plug.
Yeah,
because you went past your expiration date of getting yourself together.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. A lot of things has an expiration. The seasonal people, they have an expiration date. That's why I brought that up. Okay. Can somebody put their phone on mute? And that brings me to something that the Bible says, and I know it's not Bible study, but we have to get into this question of when the Bible says love your wife as Christ loved the church. What does that mean? I mean, does that mean giving up or throwing the towel, does that include that? I mean, if you love your wife as Christ loved the church, I understand that that's agape. I understand that that's covenant. But we have so many divorces that skip right past that. So what does that actually mean?
Well, one thing it means is that are you going to make all the sacrifices that you need to make your marriage work? And, you know, what I mean by that is that, just like you said, so many people skip over the steps to get, you know, their home life right. And then, you know, they just skip right to the, like the brother said, they don't read a book. You know, they don't go for long walks. I mean, and then they like, well, it's over. And it's like, well, what have you done, you know, to try to make your marriage work? You know, that's the whole thing. It's like, what exactly have you done to even attempt to, you know, where you're not making a mockery of this thing called marriage? You know, because that's what so many people are doing. And, you know, my wife says all the time, you know, marriage is work, but people don't want to put in the work. You know, and like we're here, you know, every week, and this is open. You know, it's a community line, and you know, anybody can participate here. You know, man, married or not, it don't matter. And it's so hard getting, you know, good guys plugged in because they don't see that they need to put in any work. You know, the response that I get is, you know, I'm good. It's like, well, I'm good too. You know, I'm coming up on 15 years this July, you know, thank God. But I'm still here every week. I still got issues. You know, my marriage still has some issues. So it's ironic to me that so many people, you know, don't want to, you know, to your earlier question, they don't want to make the sacrifices to improve their situation, and it all boils down to pride, you know, because the brother said, you know, going back to the book example, I mean, that's what I did, you know, and also tying it back, Mr. Host, to what you said about kids, you know, because when we had our second child, that's when storm clouds came over my marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what ended up happening was I did buy a book, you know, and it was the five love languages. I talk about it all the time, and I pretty much swear by it. You know, I recommend it to everyone because it literally saved my marriage. And here's the thing, though, fellas. When I brought it home to the kitchen table, you know, like, honey, we're going to read this. I bought two books. I said, honey, we're going to read this, you know, to work on our marriage. She was not receptive. You know, she was not like, yeah, you know, I mean, so, you know, that's the myth is that both parties.
Wait a minute, you said she wasn't receptive. So how did you get? Okay, so how did that conversation?
Well, I mean, it was more that this is, you know, like my brother T-Hawk said, you know, it was because I said so, and this is what we're gonna do. And thankfully, she wasn't so checked out of our marriage, you know, to say, well, I ain't doing it, you know. But however, she was not initially receptive to the book. You know, because her initial reaction was, this is another gimmick, this ain't going to work, you know, it's over, you know, for all intents and purposes, this is just how we're going to be. And she wasn't too interested about it, and, you know, but thankfully got into the book, it's easy reading, and we had time to talk and share about some of the things. And guess what? You know, I learned some things about Rodney, and she learned some things about her that, guess what, she wasn't doing right, I wasn't doing right in our marriage. And that was what was causing the problems. So, you know, I encourage, like the brother said, read. Hey, you don't have to read that book. Read a book and get away from the day-to-day, you know, do you have half of your money for the cable bill? Or did you pay the insurance? You know, get rid of that day-to-day stuff and talk about your marriage. Prioritize your marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people don't do is that they're running. You know, y'all know me. I got three kids, and I'm running all over the land.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the kids, but at the same time, my marriage is number one in my life. You know, I prioritize my marriage right under God, so don't get it twisted. And plus, I'm on here every week, but I'm doing other things that are directly related to improving my marriage. Because guess what? It's work. Just like I have to go to work every day. You know, it's not like I can work. What is today? The 11th. I can't say, you know what? I've done all my work. I'm not coming in the rest of the month. I'll see y'all on March 1st. It doesn't work like that. I have to show up every day, and I think that's the problem with, you know, men and women in marriage is that they don't show up. They don't, and especially not every day, you know.
Right.
And then it gets to a point where you're meeting at the kitchen table like, you know, all right, you know, I got to this is the grocery list we got to get, make sure we get this. And, you know, you're kind of talking past each other, but what are you actually doing in relation to improving your marriage, you know, making your marriage more, you know, healthier just in general? And, you know, it goes back to your earlier question, you know, what does that mean? You know, the whole idea is that prioritizing your marriage, making sacrifices for your marriage. I mean, you may not can work late, you know, like you want to do.
Right.
I mean, that stuff will be there tomorrow, you know.
Right.
So
that's true.
That's my take on it.
One thing that you said that I kind of want to rewind, you said the second child brought the clouds.
Yes,
that's right.
Sir.
Second kid.
Yep.
Now a child brought all of that? Because we said earlier that children can bring, you know, the storm to the marriage. And I think you might have said, you know, Malcolm said that, well, the kids keep the marriage together. But you said the second child, the clouds came with the second child. Now,
yeah,
what was it about?
It.
Oh, okay, so
yeah.
What was it?
Yeah,
what was it about two children that wasn't there when only one child was there? If you don't mind sharing.
Oh, sure. You know, that was part of it. But I mean, the second child. Now, my first child, you know, she was easy. You know, I could have five of her. I mean, she was sleeping through the night at 8 weeks, you know, and taking naps like clockwork. I was like, what are these people complaining about parenthood? This is cake. You know, I could have 10 of these little rascals. And then my second one came, and she didn't sleep through the night until almost a year old, and I'm getting up with her, and I didn't get, you know, a good night's rest until her first birthday. And I still got to go to work. I'm still on here with you cats for 3 hours on Tuesday nights.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the show goes on. But, I mean, in addition to that, you know, in addition to that, my wife took another job. So, literally, she was interviewing, you know, as she was pregnant. And, you know, so, and granted, you know, the job was closer to home and all of that good stuff. But, you know, I actually did a whole show on babies, birth control, and breakups, you know, because I know, I mean, I know that it's, I mean, it's definitely a problem, you know, but the whole idea was going back to your points earlier, Mr. Host, about the juggling act that women have to do, you know, when there's a newborn, you know, in the, you know, in the house and everything, and then still trying to be a wife. And, you know, it just was, it's difficult, you know, for her to do that and to get, it was difficult for her to get her priorities straight, and it ended up affecting the marriage.
Okay, well, during those times, and this is a question for anybody and everybody, during those times that, you know, that the clouds come and these women, our wives, we love them to death, you know, but they do get on our nerves as we do theirs. Okay. Is there ever a time that you ever feel like hitting her?
Hmm.
That's no's all around, yeses all around, or half and half?
But never,
I think it's yeses all around.
Never.
You never thought about hitting your spouse?
I mean, now, no. In the past, when you know my past. But back then, oh, it wasn't a doubt about mine. I wouldn't even think about it. I'd probably just do it. But now, oh, no.
Anybody
that's
else?
Not my...
have a thought?
Hey, that's not me making all those noises, man. That's someone else, those papers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got it.
That
thank
wasn't
you.
Me. Yeah. Hey, man, look, I'm on my second marriage, too. And in my first marriage, I learned a lot of lessons from that one. And my second marriage is a bit different, so. But my first marriage, my wife was one of those career women, and I thought that's probably what I wanted. But after I got into the marriage, I realized that I didn't necessarily want a career woman. I wanted a traditional woman, you know, because I grew up in a traditional family, and so I stayed in it as long as I could, but I actually had to get out of that one because she just wasn't what I really wanted and what I needed. So my second wife is, she's more suited for my temperament. Nothing wrong with career women, but they were just not suited for me and what I really wanted to do. So.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for sharing that. But yeah. Did you ever thought about hitting her?
Punching her?
Huh?
Yeah, man. I mean, if you mean hitting her physically?
Yeah, physically hitting her.
Man, if you're married, at some point you always want to punch out your wife. I mean,
right.
You have to restrain yourself. I mean, come on. I want to knock mine out today at Costco. She was getting on my nerves. That's almost a daily routine, man. Come on, man. Yeah, they get on your nerves, man. Every day I would want to choke her out, man. You know, but
right.
I can't do it. But come on, man.
Right. I mean, we laughing about it, but these are valid questions.
If you're married, man, you're gonna want to choke out your wife at least twice a month, man. I mean, come on. That's just the way it is, huh?
Look at the reaction of the fellas when I ask the question. Everybody, I only heard crickets.
Well, nobody wants
to admit doing this horrible. They don't even want to admit thinking about it, let alone striking her. Okay,
man,
but this is
I
a problem in America that we have to address on this show.
Yeah, you're right. It is a problem. You just have to restrain yourself because if you're married, man, your wife's going to say something to you. And do something to make you want to just, you know what I'm talking about, man. But you can't go there with them.
Well, what kind of subjects?
Yeah.
What subjects? What subjects? If you don't mind sharing, what subjects that take you over to that ledge?
One time my wife had to get some dental work done, and we paid for dental out of pocket, and she spent $4,000 to get. A root canal or something, and man, I went crazy, man. She didn't consult me. Just spent $4,000 to get a tooth fix, and that's one day almost leveled her for that one, and a couple other things, but you know that's probably about it. She kind of took me there that day. You know?
That's that one that almost took you all the way out.
Yeah. And something else. She did a couple other little things, but that's probably the major. She spent $4,000 on a tooth without consulting me, and and man, I had to restrain myself that day, man. You know.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Well, that's about
it, man.
Cool. Anybody
she's about to need a whole bunch of dental work after that.
that's probably she did other little things. But that's probably the
worst.
That's probably the worst, I think.
Mm-hmm,
I can't
mm-hmm.
think of too many other things, but...
Okay.
You know,
okay,
women, man, you know what? Women know how to push your buttons, man. You know, that's just what they do. You know,
right.
My wife knows how to push my buttons. get. I think women do it on purpose. They want to see if you're still a man deep down. So they got to push your buttons. They keep testing you, I think, man. They have to keep pushing that button, you know, to find out their limits. Because if you don't show them that you have a backbone or limits, they'll run right over you. That's just what I think, you know.
Wow.
They constantly test you.
Yeah. Anybody else want to share what pushed them to that edge?
What made me want to hit my wife, even though I won't do it, I might ball up my fist and bite my lip. She keep talking about something that she know I don't feel like talking about. Or keep asking me something that I done told her 1,000 times to answer and I don't want to address it no more. Like she may got some chip on her shoulder about it, and so it kind of keep coming up. And I'm done with it. You know, that annoys me. You know what I mean?
Wow. Anybody else? Because I know that the thing that really pushes me over the edge is my wife has two children, and I have two children. We don't have any children together. But we do have a grandson that lives with us. What really just, you know, chaps my behind is when she tries to compare how I'm raising my children and tell me I'm doing it wrong as if she have a better example to show me how to do it correctly. Now, that kind of hurts me because somebody is telling me how to do something that they didn't do correctly all the way. So since she didn't do it correctly, you know, now she's telling me that that's what I did to make them turn out like that. I'm like, well, you didn't do it. It's different to me when a woman do something to a child than when the man do something to them. Like if I say sit down and shut up, they're going to sit down and shut up. If a woman says sit down and shut up, they're going to be like, well, why? Why you got to tell me to shut up? Why you got to disrespect me like that? I didn't disrespect you. It's so much back talk. That goes along with that, especially if you're qualified to be if you are in the position of a step parent. So they already in their mind the reason why they talking back. Hey, you ain't my mama. They're not gonna say that, but that's their response. So that's their thought process to why they're talking back. So that's one thing. Go ahead.
I actually dealt with that. My second wife. Had a son, and he came into the house, and I guess they had different rules. And when he moved into my house, I had to lay down. These are the rules are changing, and he had problems with it. And I told him, I said, "Well, you can go live with your dad. You know, we're not. You know, he's like, well, we ain't negotiating. We ain't negotiating nothing. Either you know, you follow the rules, or you go live with your dad. You can't live here.
Right.
You know, I had my own rules in the house, and it took a while to understand that. This is just a new sheriff in town. I mean, I don't have a lot of rules, but I had rules like no doors could be locked. If you had opposite sex, the doors had to be open. I had to meet the guests coming home, anybody I didn't know. I just had a few rules, no eating in the car, just stuff like that I didn't like. And he tested me a little bit, and I almost had to put him out of the house. And I would have put her out, too. You know, because I just had to, my pop told me a long time ago, you have to have order in your house when you're going to have chaos. My dad told me that when I was little. He says, my pop ran his house like Hitler. He ran it with an iron fist. And you have to have that order, man, in the house. And if she can't comply, then she needs to walk the plank, too. You know, that's just the way it is, man.
And 82%. 82% of marriages in blended families or second marriages has a higher rate of divorce. So it's 82% of people who go around when they're married and have a blended family, because of these type of issues, they get divorced.
I didn't know that.
So
82%?
82%. So it's already a high divorce rate at 50%, so they say. At 50%, like they're asking everybody. But the high divorce rate of 50%, and in the second marriage is 82% success rate, non-success rate. So this is a marriage killer, or it could be, as far as the response. So, and a lot of people result in hitting their mates over some of these issues. You're not treating my child. You don't hit my child. I don't know how many couples that I've talked to that if the child belongs to the mother or the father, then the expectations of the step-parent is not to touch the child. That equates to the child's mind, you don't tell me what to do because you have no authority.
Well, I do have authority. I will put your ass out of my house, you know, straight up. I mean, that's authority I have because I'm sorry, that's just the way it is, man, because these kids, they just, you know, either you're going to run them or they're going to run you. There's really there really is no middle ground with them, man.
There's no middle ground. But a woman, let's say a woman, I'll say it doesn't matter. A spouse with a child,
right?
Where their actual biological parent is in their life.
Yeah.
The issue with the biological parent, the other biological parent of that step parent hitting that child or punishing that child is frowned upon, and it would cause conflict in that home because, you know, now you have a man telling another man, look, man, don't touch my child. If you touch my child, I will be on my way. So this creates a havoc in that home because now that father goes and tells his child, hey, the next time he touch you, call me.
And that's probably why we have the lowest divorce marriage rates in the history of mankind. That's probably one of the reasons why dudes ain't get married.
I don't know. I got some kind of disagreement with that.
Really?
Because I have two kids by a woman who just got married again. And my daughter came to me one day. Well, I went to their house. And I looked at my daughter and I said, where's the TV? Oh, Big Amin. Big Amin is the new husband. But he wasn't a husband then. She said, he punished me. And I said, well, I'm going to put the TV back in your room. He is not allowed to punish you. If he punishes you again, then you call me and tell me, and then we'll talk about it. And so I call my kid's mom, and I said, look, he punished my daughter. I unpunished her. And she said, well, why would you do that? I said, because that's just your boyfriend. When you get married and he's a living person, then I'll understand punishment. And even sit down with the kids and explain to them, look, this is your stepdad. He's going to have rules that I don't have. You're going to have to follow those rules. But until you get married, he's a boyfriend. So he don't need to be inflicting no punishment, none of that. Because what if y'all break up? Now, he done brought all this drama into the house, and he's not even around no more. And once they got married, once they got married, I sat down with him. I sat down with my kid's mom. And I sat down with my kids, and I explained to my kids, because my daughter always say, he makes me clean my room. And me, I'm not a stickler for a clean room. I mean, it's your room, you got to sleep in it. So if it's how you want it, it's how you want it. But she would come to me and say, he makes me clean my room. And I would explain to her, those are his rules. This is how he lives. This is what he thinks is right. Yes, I don't agree with that, but you're not living with me. Now, I can work and get to the point where you can come in with me and then the rules will be different. But until that happens, you have to obey this man. And everybody was okay with the conversation, you know, but I don't just tolerate you punishing my kids when you ain't got no title over their boyfriend. No, 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 no. I mean, it's clear that you got to spank my kids. If my kids do something to the point that you feel they need to spank it, then you call me, and I'll take care of it. I don't believe in spankers. I mean, I got spankers growing up, but I don't spank. I got a 19-year-old son. I spanked him one time, and I don't really know what that was for. But, you know, I don't do the spanking thing. But if something happens, you call me, and me and him will sit down and talk about it. And I guess the overall point I'm making is if every parent is involved, if the old dad is involved with the new dad and the old woman is involved with the new woman, and everybody communicates, none of this mess will happen. But, you know, the ex-boyfriend want to be mad because you got a new man now. So now he want to fight the new man. What I'm going to fight that guy for? He didn't do nothing.
Well, at first you just said she called you and said he's punishing me. I can't watch TV because my mom's boyfriend punished me. And you stepped to her about him punishing your daughter, right?
Because he was just a boyfriend.
Okay, however it is, this is her rules. This is how she looks at it. Okay, this man is helping me take care of my bills. This man is putting food on the table. Me and him are courting pretty serious.
Okay, hold on.
Okay,
all that wasn't happening because they're Islamic, so things don't happen like that. That things didn't happen that way. It's not until they physically become husband and wife. Then they cohabitate.
Uh-huh.
At that time, he was just a visitor.
Okay. But the point I'm making now, that's a unique situation because of the religious factor. But the point I'm making is, it's a lot. This attributes to a divorce. Of when do you see when you know it's over? And I know my ex-wife tried to dictate rules, the same thing you just said, but we were in a marriage, and she would call and try to dictate rules in this house. Even though I wouldn't allow it, it was still a factor that she tried. The fact that she tried to call the house and scold my wife pretty much and told my wife, my kids are not going to call you mother. My kids are not going to do some of the things that I told them they don't have to do. My wife was making them, read at night, taking extra classes after school was over, taking tutoring, because we both felt that they needed it after the divorce was over because they start slipping in their grades or whatever. But the children would go back to her and say she made us do this. One time my wife took a belt to my daughter because my daughter told her she was staying after school for tutoring, and the tutoring session was over, but she kept staying after school, and we didn't know the tutoring session was over until someone called from the school and said, hey, your daughter's up here loitering around at the school, and my wife told her, no, she's up there for tutoring. And she said, no, she's not up here for tutoring. Tutoring is over. That's been over for about 15, 20 days. And so that was a dangerous situation. So my wife spanked her. I wasn't available to. So my wife she spanked her, and my daughter called her mom, and her mom and my wife got into a big stink about it. And that kind of caused a wedge because I wasn't there. I didn't know what was going on. I was out for Navy duties or whatever. But that caused a problem. And it could have caused a potential problem between my marriage because my wife was like, look, if I can't spank them, they got to go live with her, which she was telling the truth. But I know it wasn't good for them to be with her. So that kind of brought me into the middle ground. And when it was her daughter living with us, her daughter was drinking and did some other stuff. And I said, no, you got to go. And so her daughter's father came and to see me. It's like, hey, man, you don't talk to my daughter like this. I said, well, your daughter living in my house, we can talk about it, or we don't have to talk about it. Because now I felt like he was attacking my manhood because he was talking to me in front of his daughter. First of all, you don't talk in front of the children. You address the other adult, not in front of them. So in other words, you telling me that I'm supposed to let your daughter do what she want to do in my house. That's not going to happen, So it almost broke us up again there, children. It almost broke us up before we even got started good, okay? But to my question, how we began is how many of you actually hit your wife or hit your spouse or your spouse hit you? Have anybody's spouse ever hit them? Ain't nobody ever got knocked out by their wife?
Nope.
Somebody has. They're just not going to admit it.
Right.
Ain't nobody going to admit to that.
I know that ain't happened to me, though.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm got to carry this thing by myself because I got slapped by 3 or 4 times by my ex-wife. And she
what?
Did it because she knew I couldn't hit her back because I was in the military. MPs are coming for me if I hit her.
Wow.
So she knew the rules because her dad was in the military and he got hit by her mom. And then so when I was in the military with her, she struck me, and I was like, what is your problem? You know, she done kicked me between my legs. I mean, she was crazy. But she was mad, and that's how she kind of retaliated against me, trying to hit me. And it's nobody I can report to, but it's somebody that she can report to.
And what was she saying when she was knocking you upside the head and kicking you and stuff?
She was calling me all kind of degrading names, you know. Just different names, like calling me a B and, you know, calling me, you know, things that dudes call girls, you know. She's calling me these names, you know. I was like, really? You know, so, but I couldn't do anything. And if a man reports that he's being hit by a woman, what does that look like?
Right, yeah.
Hey, assault is assault.
But the police don't look at it that way, not unless a woman is hitting a man. And all she got to do is be crying and say, no, he hit me first, and then guess who's going to jail? So, but, okay, but I want to move on from that because don't nobody want to be real. You know? Don't nobody want to admit to getting knocked upside the head by the old lady. You
know? It might just be you, man. You never know. It might just be you.
Exactly.
Like, I guess tonight it is, you know. But yeah.
Hey, let me ask you a question real quick, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
To see if there's something wrong with me. If my wife put her hands on me, like say if my wife slapped me, I'm gonna slap her back. If my wife slapped me. If she slapped me, I ain't gonna slap her hard as I can, but I'm gonna slap her just as hard as she slapped me.
What if it's extra hard, left a print on your face?
She gonna have a print. I'm left handed. She have a right on her right jaw.
How do you think that's gonna fare out if she called the police?
I mean,
right,
I really wouldn't be thinking about that.
First.
I would do it because I live with her. Like if a woman on the street slapped me, I wouldn't do nothing. But if my wife slapped me, I'm slapping her back because she got to know she can't do that. She got to know it's going to be some consequences.
Say
that one more time.
That's not like he got more respect for the woman on the street than his wife.
I don't have anything to do with respect. It's got to do with who I live with.
It
doesn't have anything to do with me showing that woman on the street more respect. I don't care nothing about that woman. That's why I wouldn't slap her.
Wait, so you care about your wife, and that's the reason you would slap her?
Exactly. Like I said, if I was married to my wife for 5 years and she slapped me, she getting slapped back. If I was on my second date with her and she slapped me, I probably just wouldn't, you know, see her no more. I'd leave her alone.
That's some rough stuff, man.
So she punched you in your eye. You going to punch her back in the eye?
I'd probably smack her.
Oh, okay. You're downgraded a little bit.
I wouldn't hit her with a closed fist. I'd slap her. And it wouldn't even be... It would be like, I would say, okay, I would talk her through it.
Like a child.
Oh, okay, hold on. I want to hear how this
goes. I would talk her through it. She'd be trying to cover herself. I would hold her down, move her hands out of her face and say, now I'm about to slap you for slapping me. And slap me.
Like
and then
right
if she slapped me again, we're going to go through that routine one more time until she stops.
Oh, it's going to be order.
It's gonna be order.
I'm not suggesting that I wouldn't feel like doing that,
But I think that is automatically going to lead to some, automatically going to lead to some jail time.
But she wouldn't, she wouldn't call the police on me. She, my wife wouldn't call the police on me for slapping her back.
You think, well, I don't know about that, because I think women are called the police for anything.
My wife wouldn't call the police on me. If she slapped me and I slapped her back, now if I just jumped on her, that's one thing. But if, and plus I've already told her that. She know that.
Oh, you said it straight.
Well, she knows. If you slap me, I'm going to slap you back. Don't put your hands on me. I'm not going to put my hands on you. Don't put your hands on me. I don't care if you're mad or none of that other stuff. Don't put your hands on me.
Now, what makes that right for a woman to be able to get away with hitting a man and he not retaliate by giving her equal or less than what she gave him? What makes that equal?
It's not right. It's just, it's reality. It's just that, unfortunately, the law is going to look at it as, as a man, you hitting a woman, you're going to be the one to go to jail. It's not that it's right. She should know not to put her hands on you. It should be reciprocated. But she should feel that, but you can't be the one to do it. You just got to find another way to handle it, because it's just going to go sideways for you, and ultimately for your marriage.
No doubt.
But what goes on in their mind? I mean, because I often felt like, you know, after she slapped me, I felt so embarrassed. Because I didn't do anything back and couldn't do anything back, but she equated that to, oh, he really is a punk. You know, oftentimes, you know, it only happened like 5 or 6 times during our 10-year marriage. But the last time it happened, I said, I held her down because she wanted to talk. We was going to a ball or something. We was getting ready to go to a ball. And a lot of the women at my job that she knew of also, pretty fine women, but that's not, I think that she saw that they were fine and saw that the conversation was directed towards me. And they were talking about, amongst themselves, in front of everybody else, men included, they were talking about, hey, the dress that I have, I can't wear a bra with it. So what are you going to do? Oh, I'm going to tape this here and tape that there and tape it down so my shirt won't come open. So I was just listening, you know. So when I got home, my wife at the time was saying, you know, the dress, the ball gown that she purchased, it she couldn't wear a bra with it because the back was down, the same similar, you know, like all ball gowns are. And I said, well, I'm offering a suggestion to her from what I heard over on the wash floor that, hey, just put some tape right here, because the girls on the job, they're telling me that they put tape right here and they tape it down to their skin. It's some tape that you can buy. And she said, what heifer told you about what they're going to be doing and not wearing no bra? I was like, they wasn't talking to me. So I'm trying to explain that to her. And she tries to call the girls. I say, and I'm hanging up the phone. I say, no, hey, it wasn't like that. Calm down. So I just went on to work, and I worked 12 hours, and I got off that morning, 7 o'clock. I got home, and she was in the midst of explaining to me of the conversation she had with 3 other girls that was talking about. She addressed them to like they was talking directly to me, and they had explained to her, no, we wasn't talking. We were talking to each other. We didn't even know he was listening. And it just made me look like more of a punk to the women at work. But I said, you know what, it's a done deal. You crazy. We leaving in about 6 months. I can get out of here and don't have to, you know, feel this embarrassment. Well, while she was explaining herself, I think I closed my eyes and I did one of those, you know, I was half knocked out because I wasn't paying no attention to it. And all I felt was a hand come down on my nose and smash my nose or punch or something. And I jumped out of bed so quick, and I grabbed and pinned her down to the bed, and I told her, look, don't ever touch me again like that, you know, or we will get a divorce. And she called the police, and they saw the bruises on her wrist. And I had to check into security. I had to take off of work because they withheld my security clearance until I had my domestic charges dropped. And that's in the military. That's how the military do it. So no matter what you do, it just brings me back to my point. Even though it's, I think it would be fair to just, you know, give them the right treatment, you know, you slap and get slapped. It doesn't work well with the justice system.
Yeah.
So you've got to be mindful of it.
When you were telling that story, in my mind, I thought that your reaction was reasonable, like grabbing her up and be like, that's not okay. I thought that was a reasonable reaction. So the fact that you still got taken away for that is just like, wow, that's just crazy.
And I'm just trying to let you brothers know and make you aware that it's no tolerance for any kind of you putting your hands on the woman, because when they come to the house, they're coming to get you. For the most part, not unless you just bleeding all over the place and she don't have no scratches on her, then you can say, "Hey, she totally tore me up." But if it's, I mean, if it's her word against yours, and she got some visible marks on her, and you know you got a little blood that you just wiped off, and you just showed them the tissue. I had that. That's what I had. Look at this tissue, and she's like, "That ain't nothing." And I was like, "She said no." No, she said he get nosebleeds all the time. That's what she told him.
Wow.
And I was like, I can't believe you just told, you know I don't get, what's wrong with you? And here I go off to the check-in in the barracks, you know, and looking like a criminal because I held her down and had a discussion with her, letting her know, don't hit me again, you know. So, but we have to be very careful, fellas. We have to be very careful when we're dealing with women or our wives as far as what they constitute as domestic violence. And our rights are not as equal as theirs when it comes to this because we are the stronger vessel.
Right.
Okay. So, but anybody else got anything before we move on?
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, and my wife and I have a history of losing our temper with each other. And about 10 years ago, I got myself in control in that aspect of things. And so what happens now, and it hasn't happened recently, it's probably been a couple of years since it's happened, but what happened now is she will start pushing my buttons and start getting in my face and yelling at me, and I will actually call the police. And be like, because what will happen is she won't let me leave. She'll block my exit, you know what I'm saying? And so I will have to, if I want to leave, I would have to physically move her, and I don't want to put my hands on her in anger. So I actually have to call the police, and I called probably, you know, at our heyday, I probably called the police 15 or 20 times and said, I need to leave my house, and I do not want to put my hands on my wife. Can you please come? And then they would come, and I would leave. So, I mean, you know, I understand the need not to put, you know, not to put your hands on a woman, but it's just rough out there sometimes the way they treat us.
And you're right, and that's sometimes – kill the chemistry, and once that's gone, then it's like, you know, that's really a turnoff because now you're not out for my good, you're out to destroy me almost, and you don't care what happens until, you know, it start affecting the pockets, my pockets start affecting your pockets, and now you want to try to, oh, he didn't mean it, and now it looks like, she's scared of him, so she's coming with that.
Uh-huh.
He didn't do anything, a story. So what we're going to do as the government, we're going to press charges against him. So it's a downward spiral, downhill spiral after that, you know, that one particular case. So we really need to be very careful. But that brings me to my next segment here when we're talking about the chemistry. When the chemistry is dead, are there any other worthwhile aspects in the relationship once it's dead to keep it going? Is there anything else that we can hold on to if the chemistry is dead? What else do we have to hold on to stop the divorce?
The word.
Yeah. Okay, what part of it?
I'm not the Bible scholar here.
Well, I mean, it works for you, right? I mean, the way you're saying it, I mean, or is that a textbook answer?
I was just giving an answer. I'm an imposter of mine.
Okay.
Say that question again. You said the chemistry is gone. So what else?
If the chemistry is gone, are there other worthwhile access in a relationship to keep the marriage going?
No. Because, I mean, I think you got to have the whole reason of y'all being together was initially because of the chemistry, right? So, you know, my response to that would be you need to get the chemistry back. And, again, it goes back to my earlier point, is that maybe you need to do something different. You know, and I think that people want change, but they don't want to do anything radical like I did, bringing a book home, you know, to somebody that wasn't initially responsive, you know. But I never would have known the after effect if I hadn't done that. And, I mean, it was kind of, you know, honestly, fellas, it was, I don't want to say a last resort, but it was, I mean, it was kind of like the last straw, the last opportunity, you know, to get my marriage back on track. So, I mean, it was definitely something. It was risky, but, you know, thankfully, I'm on the other side of it, and, you know, I learned a lot from it. But, you know, it was definitely some interesting times, you know, during those few years when those storm clouds, and maybe you haven't had any storm clouds in your marriage, but, you know, it is what it is, you know. Now I'm good after that, after reading the book and, you know, doing what I needed to do. But, you know, I think oftentimes, going back to the topic, you know, when did you know it was over? I think the woman is waiting for the man to make a move, you know. Generally speaking, in most cases, I think the woman is waiting for the man to move. You know, if, you know, like the host said earlier about chemistry and, you know, getting the chemistry back. I mean, like he said earlier, I think that trying to get it back, I think the man has to step up and, you know, be the head of household that he claims to be. So that's just my take on it.
Well, does that mean, now, oftentimes when the chemistry is gone, I talked to a couple of fellas the other day, and they made the point that they say, you know, I am not at home in my home.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, well, what does that mean that you're not at home in your home? He said, well, I am a religious man. And I try to do the right thing, but this woman that I'm with, you know, she is just not receptive to my ways. My ways or the ways that I try to pursue her to get, you know, back in the good feel of things and get back into the chemistry with her, she thinks it's a scheme. She thinks that, you know, when I'm trying to bring her flowers, it's an attachment to it. She thinks when I try to cook dinner or do something nice that she, you know, she kind of look at me with one eye open like, what are you planning? So in his eyes, it was really over because he couldn't, it was nothing that he could do to get back in her graces. And I proceeded the conversation with letting him know, look, you sounded like Adam just now. This woman you gave me, okay, you have a responsibility to the woman that you chose to marry. You can't say that this woman that I'm with as if she was slapped in your lap. The way that he said it, this woman that I'm with, it was like it was an arranged marriage.
Mm. Wow.
You know, this is not an arranged marriage. Whatever you put into a person, don't get mad when you go for the withdrawal and it ain't what you expected. So he was trying to, because I had to get, you got to get to the root of the problem, you know. And that act, and he told, he actually, when he said that he wasn't at home in his home, my question to him was, what are you pouring into your wife to receive that from your house? So I'm going to ask you, fellas, are you at home in your home? Hello?
Yeah.
Anybody?
I kind of understand somewhat what the brother was talking about. Because, I mean, you know, and I get it, what you pour into your marriage and when you try to withdraw is something else. But, you know, we talk about on this call a lot of times people put this front up in the beginning. And that front, to me, is serious. Even whether you call it the representative or not, it's still something that's a promise that you make to me. You know what I'm saying? So you put, and these are the things that you promised me were going to happen if I marry you, these things that you've shown me. And then later on within the marriage, you flip the script and stop doing these things. I got a problem with that. And now I'm trying to figure out, well, what marriage am I in? In my own house, this person that I'm with is not even the person that I thought I was getting. It's like buying a appliance that was advertised that it does all this and all that, and then you get it home and it doesn't do any of these things. You know what I'm saying? So I understand sometimes where it's like, you know, I don't feel at home in my own house because you don't kind of know the person that she turned out to be in your own house, if that makes any sense.
So
yeah,
when you go ahead.
No, I've told this story many times, but there was times early in our marriage where, you know, I would ride around the block 4 or 5 times. I would go to happy hour. I would do a whole routine, not just to come home to my own home, because you just knew you were going to walk into something. And you just didn't feel comfortable walking into your own house, not even seeing your own kids, because at the end of the day, it's going to be an argument, or it's going to be, you know, you're going to be questioned 5 times on the same thing, maybe 3 different, you know, 4 different ways, and it frustrates you. You just don't feel like being there, or when you get home, you know, you wait till your wife go to sleep before you even go upstairs. You know,
that might be
2:30 in the morning. You just don't feel like being bothered in your own home. And you know, that's the first step of get ready to leave. And it could be over something small, but because every time you come home, it escalates, or, you know, that same conversation from 3 months ago comes back, and you never resolve that first issue. You know, it just it drives you crazy.
So how do you get your house back in a situation like that? I mean, T-Hawk said that, you know, you marry someone who you thought was going to do certain things.
No, you didn't there was no misconception, or you never would have married this person. What you saw was actual action, actual personality traits. This is the person that they showed you that they were. You know what I'm saying? And to me, that's a promise. Someone said on the call earlier that when you meet somebody and you have sex all the time, and then later on down the line, you have sex less, that's a broken promise. You see what I'm saying? Why would I marry somebody? If I knew up front that we was going to have sex less, I'd have made a different decision.
Well, how do you test that out? How do you test that? I mean, my brother Ike said, he said, you know, well, because of menopause, it's because of a condition or because of lack of exercise or whatever have you. That's not on purpose, right?
What do you mean it's not? I mean, but those are isolated incidents. The number one complaint the number one complaint for men, married men, is that the sex has changed, period.
Okay.
We don't talk about the word communication change. We don't talk about the intimacy change. We don't talk about the cooking is less. We don't talk about any of those things. Oh, she doesn't raise the kids right. No. The number one is because the sex has decreased. Am I right or wrong?
That's true. That's primarily the answer for most men.
Now, if we knew that going in, think about this. If you knew that, if she told you, okay, while we're dating, we're going to do it 3-4 times a week, sometimes twice on Sunday. But 2 years from now, you may get it once every other week. You think we would have stepped into that?
Let me ask a question on that. So when did you know the sex 8 times a week was over? At what point do you know that?
Well, you ain't getting it 8 times a week. That's when you know it's over. Simple mathematics. Start counting on your fingers. Wait a minute. Hold on. This didn't happen. Man, I ain't got it in a minute. What's going on?
That's good.
Well, that was a question I asked him. You know, he made another statement. You know, or another brother made a statement about how happy they were when their spouse was not around.
That's tough. That's when you know it's over. That's when you know it's over. I mean, I'm just saying, man. That's when you know it's over. Or it's headed
that
direction.
But how do you come to that? I mean, I know, well, I can't ask it. Because sometimes, you know, if me and her are really at it, you know, I don't want to be around her. You know, I don't want to be around her, but that's temporal. You know, that's, you know, after about a couple of hours, then, you know, I'm like, you know, she give me that look, or if I'm laying down in the bed and one of them toes hit me on my leg or something, then I'm like, okay, well, you know, let's go and see what's going on. But, you know, it's never a permanent or long or extended period of time. I think the Bible even tells us if you want time to separate from your spouse, do it long, not too long, so the devil can get in there and cause corruption or chaos between you two, or get in there, or, you know, and separate for a time of fasting, but hurry up and get back together. Don't do it for a long period of time when you're married. So that was the suggestion. But, you know, you got guys that live in the other room. You know, you got guys in the other bedroom and don't know how to come. You got guys that live in the basement.
Got guys that take the California King to the... No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I ain't going to say that no more.
Yes, sir. So how do you make your home again? I mean, if you're out of the graces, how do you make... What advice or suggestions that I can give to these men who wants to stay married, but their home is not their home? What would you tell a person in this position?
Intervention.
There it is.
Intervention. You throwing out textbook. I'm gonna call you the textbook man, Chris.
I mean,
but he's right.
Intervention.
Talk to him, Chris. Talk to him.
I wouldn't even say do textbook in this instance, but a therapist. Remember I used to say that I dealt with somebody and we would go to Recovery Couple Anonymous classes together. You know, if you really wanted to work, you got to put work into it. Nothing's going to just work because it's supposed to work. You got to work at it.
Exactly. Same thing I said earlier.
Do you really think, though, that a therapist is going to make her do the things that she promised to do in the office, and then she come back home and do the same thing that T-Hall just said a few minutes ago?
Then she don't really want it.
Does that mean that she really don't want it, or that just means she just went back into routine?
That means she don't want it, because if I say as a therapist, this is what y'all need to do. Y'all need to have a date night once a week. And if she refuses to have a date night, then she don't want it. If I say as your therapist, y'all need to do this, that, and the third, and she refuses, or not just she, even one of the parties refuses to do it, then that party's not serious.
Yeah, and it takes two people to make it work. You know, one ain't going to cut it.
So if you done did all the defecating, you done did all this, bad things to her and poured all this stuff into this woman, and then she's only giving back to you what she had to receive all this time, and now she's giving it back to you and it don't feel right, how long are you going to stick it out with her as she stick it out with you? Because it takes 9 months to deposit something. Well, it takes one day to deposit something and 9 months for it to grow and be given back to you. So if you deposit all of this crap into your wife and 9 months later she gives birth to crap back on you, shouldn't you give her that time to, you know, you keep your advances? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I absolutely agree. If I cheat on you for 2 years, 5 years, and then I say, you know what, I'm going to be a good husband, I'm going to stop that, it should be 2 to 5 years worth of work on my end. 100%. 99 won't do. It should be 2 to 5 years of work on my end to start the process of getting things in order again. It shouldn't be overnight because, I mean, I ain't messing up overnight, so they're going to get fixed overnight. But I absolutely agree with what you said. It should be some time because she got to see, or he, the party got to see that you're serious. And we can pretend for 6 weeks. We can pretend for 6 months. Hell, I done lied to a girl for 2 years. But over time, that person will see that you're sincere and begin to slowly drop their guard down.
Do you understand? I mean, do you realize that 72% of men cannot dish out what they take? I mean, they can't take what they dish out. 72% of men can't receive.
Oh, believe that. I believe that.
98% of men, if they cheated on their wife, 98% of men can't stand her cheating on him once.
Oh, definitely.
Why is that?
Why is that?
Why is that? If you cheated on, let's say you cheated on your wife with six girls, you done slept with six women outside of your marriage, and she found out about it, and she go sleep with one, why are you automatically out? 98% of men are automatically out.
You know why? Because the six females I slept with were strangers. The one dude she slept with was somebody that we both knew.
That makes it cool to leave.
No.
That's funny.
God, I be choking over here, man.
But no. Just, I mean, that's a valid question. Why can't you take what you dish out? You slept with six, not you, Chris, but anybody. You sleep with six women outside of your marriage. And she sleep with one man outside of the marriage, and you out because she cheated on you. So this is how much women put up with some of the things that we do because they don't see it being over when you cheat on them once. You can just say, I was drunk, or I'm being a man, I'm a man being a man. Then you kick all these sob stories in about, You know, my daddy was a dog, my uncle was a dog, everybody in my family is a dog, and then she accepts you again, and you do it over again. And she loves you so much, she don't call it quits yet. It takes 5 and 6 times before you call it quits after she cheat on you once. So I don't understand these numbers. I don't think it's fair. I don't think that we as men have anything to stand on as far as, you know, Chris, you gave me an answer, but I don't know, bro. You know, yeah, she slept with somebody that she knew, and I slept with six people I didn't knew. I think that makes it more dangerous. I don't know. It might, you know, that makes it more dangerous for her, for you to bring that back to her and, you know, be with her again, in my opinion. I don't know. But the fact remains that she stayed with you. Or they willing to take all of that until they had enough. But after you do all of that, how do you get back in good with your wife if you want to stay with her? Say, for instance, after you found Christ, and you say, hey, I found Christ now, but, you know, I want to stay now. What can you do to get back in with your wife?
Faith without works is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You got to put it in. You got to work it out.
And some people, some men, believe it or not, they are trapped in their relationships because of stuff. Cars, homes, furniture, children, you know. Do you know anybody that's trapped in their relationship because of things or things that they're afraid to lose? Like child support, that's a big one, you know, in the man's eye. I don't want to pay child support.
I got one better for you.
What's that?
How about trapped in your marriage because you're afraid to lose your wife? You don't want to be by yourself.
Oh.
You need the other half of the mortgage. That's real talk.
Do people stay married for that? Do people stay married for that? I mean, do they stay married because
all the time.
Of...
All the time. There's women right now in marriages because they don't, it's horrible, but they don't want to leave because, you know, their security.
Yep.
They don't want to be by themselves. It's men. They don't want to be the old man at the club starting over again, so they stay with that miserable wife. They become a punk.
I never thought of it like that. I don't see how being miserable. That's deep.
It doesn't make sense, man, but I think that's, I mean, why would a woman stay in a battered marriage, in an abusive relationship? Why would she stay there?
She hopes it's going to get better.
Yeah. But it don't get better. I mean, you know, the same person doesn't change. And he ain't going to change 9 times out of 10 because you're accepting it. Still there.
I wouldn't say that. There's a sliver
You hope that it would change. You know what I'm saying? But if it's a battered, abusive relationship and it hasn't changed, but she's still there, why would she still stay there?
That's what my mother did.
I'm pretty sure we all know somebody that did it.
Not my mother personally.
Yeah.
She didn't have a fit if she heard me say that.
Yeah, I mean, she could have left, right? Right? She could have left, you know, but she didn't.
Here she got
I don't know.
Well, it depends on how many kids that the woman have, because in the old school, you know, they didn't care. You know, you got 10 kids, you ain't going nowhere no matter how bad he beat you. Or how bad he cheat on you. You're not going anywhere because of the secure check that he got coming in. It doesn't matter if he done, you know, spent some of it on another woman, as long as he take care of home and them 10 kids. Why don't the women have that mentality today? And I'm not saying they should, you know, allow people to use and abuse them, but I'm just saying, where is that? How can we get that back?
Oh, no.
I mean, because that's what I think this country is missing. I think that they missing the morals that our ancestors had brought to us. I believe that, you know, and I don't want to say that they should tolerate somebody mistreating them. That's not what I'm saying. But they're so quick to run to the divorce court that, you know, anytime if a man hit a woman, I want to go back to that, because if a man strike a woman once, the saying is, if he hits you once, he'll hit you again. Well, and without even realizing it was an isolated incident, without even realizing that this man never hit anybody once in his life, but just because he hit her and she never thought that he would hit her, now he strikes her one time and she's out. You know, do y'all think that's fair? Do you think that's a fair statement? What do you think should happen at that point? How do you think because God expects us as men to carry this load, not by ourselves, but to carry the load. Put it on your shoulders, just have your woman to pick her feet up and don't drag her feet while you carrying her. But a lot of us are not willing to stay in there. A lot of us are not willing to go that extra mile, like Chris and Rodney were saying earlier. We're not willing to go in there and say, hey, look, let's pick up this book. Let's read it together. We're not willing to, because a lot of time that's embarrassing. You know, I'm not reading to you. I don't want to do this. I mean, like Rodney said, it was some resistance there in the first place. He'd come home, bring some books on the table, put them down on the table. We're going to read this. She's like, hey, I ain't got time for that. So how do we get back to that? You know, I don't know what – I know this show was not even alive or thought of when Rodney, your second child. Or was it?
No. No, yeah, she was born in 2007, so, yeah, no. No. Nope.
You didn't have this avenue when your second child was born.
Nope.
But yet still you had it in you to go do something about a marriage that was slipping, you know, to the divorce
right.
category.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. So what geared and engineered you to say, you know what, we're gonna go do this? Was it the children? Was it the stuff? Was it the love for your wife? Was it the embarrassment? I mean, what was it that made your state of mind flip to, we're gonna read some books? We're not gonna go off of your.
Yeah, I would say for me, you know, it was the God in me, of course, and I would also say that, you know, my parents were still married today. And I would say that, you know, that was the reason that I, you know, divorce wasn't really an option. I mean, we had talked about it, had discussed it, but it wasn't really an option. So, I mean, it was... I had to figure it out.
So you guys didn't never, ever talk about divorce at all?
Separation we did, not divorce. It never got to that point, thankfully.
Wow. But you had someone that was open to options.
Correct.
Like your wife. She was like, okay, well, whatever it takes, I'm down to do it. Right.
I mean, yeah.
I think that's a key.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not whatever it takes, but I'll listen to you.
Yeah, I mean, she was, like I said before, not receptive to it, but she didn't shut it all the way down. You know, again,
sure.
She said, I'll try it, but I'm not sure. You know, she wasn't excited about it, you know, when we started the process. Because, again, like I said, yeah, the book, because it was like the thought is that is it gonna help our marriage? I mean, that was the end goal. And if you going into it, she didn't think it was. So why be excited about it, you know? But like you said, I mean, to your point, you know, no, she didn't shut it all the way down. We did read the book. You know, I mean, together, and we got, you know, our relationship it was healed, you know, as a result of it.
But,
your point, you know, it's, go ahead.
But, and here's the question that I want to ask, and this is not directed at you, Rodney, at all. But should you have to convince your spouse that a method of saving the marriage, that this might be a good method of saving the marriage, should you have to convince them of that? Shouldn't they say, I'll do anything? I mean, is it wrong to believe that your spouse should say, I'll do anything to save my marriage, if they really want to save it? That nothing is too small or minute.
I think that's in the ideal world, the ideal situation, you know, but it just doesn't work out that way. I mean, you generally have one person that's more, I want to say, focused, than the other. It's, I mean, it can be where you have both parties that are just pulling, you know, prioritizing the marriage, you know, as much as possible. But, I mean, generally you have one that's sort of, and, it, you know, it should be the man, you know, to lead that charge, you know. But mm-hmm. in some cases it's the woman that's like, you know, we need to fix our marriage. And it's the man who's like, nah, I don't know. You know, so, I mean, it can go both ways, so.
Sure,
you know,
sure. Go ahead.
No, I'm done. Go ahead.
And I think that something was missed when it gets to that point. You know what I mean? Because, again, there's an echo.
Yeah, I'm trying to fix it. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, you get to that point, and one person wants to save it, and the other one is kind of reluctant. It means, I think, something has been missed along the way. Something has got lost along the way.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Something just ain't right with them. Or they may be already have one foot out the door. You know, because I just don't think it should always be a convincing type thing. If both people want to genuinely make it work.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah. I mean, I feel you on that, but again, it's...
You're right,
two. Though. You know,
takes two.
It's
tough. We had that show once, being in war, and you're the only one on the battlefield, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know
how do
I'm
go
saying?
To war for my marriage when I'm the only one on the battlefield? Yeah, I remember
that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And speaking of the battlefield, you know the host, you said something early on, and you said about your wife, you know, having the surgery,
mm-hmm.
where she got breast, you know, and
mm-hmm.
you know, with that whole, you know, situation, and you talked about it on here before about the breast cancer, but tying it back to what we're talking about tonight, you know, when will you know that's over? You know, when it comes to the cancer.
Oh, it's already a done deal. It's they got it all out. The last surgery she just went through Friday was just to get the implants. That was the last stage of the surgery, and all the surgical procedures. But it takes a
toll.
So
it's over. I mean, the cancer can never come back. I mean, it's just completely done.
Well, yeah, because now she's on the meds to prevent. You know, cancer feeds off of estrogen, so she has to continue to take these anti-estrogen pills, which causes her, you know, a woman without estrogen might as well be with a dude. Not to say like that.
Right. I know what you're saying. Yeah.
She's supposed to take these anti-estrogen pills that causes her to, you know, she has sporadic moods and mood swings,
yeah.
and but she's so cool that, you know, she has her business that she operates, and she takes it out on them. So I'm good. So by the time she finished getting on those guys, then, you know, she's exhausted. The food is cooked at home. You know, the kids has already got their homework done, and everything's a wrap, you know. So, so she knows how to take it in a direction where, you know, it's not bothering the home. She stays busy, and that's a major factor of having a surgery like this, because when you're sitting down and you're not doing anything, then it can attack as well. It hates oxygen, so you have to keep moving. You know, you have to exercise. You have to do certain things to keep it up off you. And that's what a lot of people who have cancer, they don't do. They just kind of like, okay, well, I give up. But when you keep fighting like she is, you know, that's another attract. I mean, my focus went from nice big breasts to a strong-willed woman that won't quit. And in that, in my woman, she's so strong and continuing to move forward and being an advocate for people who have this thing, going out there and tell them, hey, you don't have to lose your hair. You don't have to be down in the slumps. You don't have to accept what the devil try to take you out with. You know, the best thing for you to do is to keep it moving and don't fight. I mean, don't give in to this cancer fight. Don't give in to, okay, don't think your husband is going to go to another woman just because you got something or you lost something. You know, and she's still advertising and advocating, you know, the show, you know, the book, still talk to people about everything. I mean, yeah. she's even more stronger than she was before she got the double mastectomy. So, you know.
But that's why I asked my question, is because, you know, the answer to the question is no. It's not over. Because
right.
You said still has to take anti-estrogen pills or medication or whatever. Still has to exercise regularly. You know, I'm sure you have to eat right and those sort of things.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it's not over, you know, I mean, in those terms. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I mean, it's always
okay. I thought
she
was asking, was the cancer still in her body, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that too, because, I mean, and, you know, you clarified that for me, that, you know, the cancer is, you know, fully removed and everything, and that's great. I didn't know if it could, you know, you could have, you know, cancer come back, you know, just, you know, come out of remission, you know, into her body.
Right.
You know, and, but, you know, as far as this whole, you know, ordeal you were talking about, I think early, you know, lifting the load, you know, that's, with making sure that she's healthy, you know, and monitoring her whole situation. I mean, it's a constant, you know, at this point, you know what I mean? I mean, it's,
yeah.
You know, and it kind of goes back to what I said about, it's kind of like the marriage, where it's, and it's a constant. I think that's where people go wrong, is just thinking that, oh, you know, I said I do, we had the honeymoon, and then they just go to work every day and pop out some kids, and then they never really go back to focusing on and prioritizing the marriage. You know, it's like, how do we get out of order here? You know, and it's like, and I think, you know, I think that it's both of us, both the husband and the wife's fault, but it shouldn't be that much, I guess, pulling teeth to try to get back on track, I guess. But again, it goes both ways. You know, I know, you know, women today that want their marriage to be healthy and whole and healed, but you know, the guy is just sitting there like a bump on the log. He won't do anything, you know, to do that. So it's like, you know, what do you do? And or and the vice versa, it's like you trying to do these things for your marriage, and the wife is just sitting there like a bump on the log, like, and it's like, what do you do? I mean, ideal situation, both people are like, yo, this thing has gotten off track. We need to get it back. And both people are like, yeah, you know, team marriage, let's get it done. But that's not
right,
how it works.
Right.
You know, unfortunately.
Well, and you're absolutely right. And that brings me to my last point of how many notches have your wife dropped or gained since you guys been married, you know, because T-Hawk said earlier, you know, you introduce yourself to, you know, superwoman, super freak, super get it in all the time, and then all of a sudden, you know, you lose some cool points with me after 2 years of saying, you know, once a week or once a month. And now you're stuck in this relationship where this woman won't put out like she was putting out before. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, she's trying to have you to understand that her body has changed and she's getting older and she's not eating the right foods and she's going through menopause and excuse, excuse, excuse. In your mind, it's an excuse, but in her mind, it's valid. So, you know, mm-hmm. what do you do at that point when you feel like, okay, you hoodwinked me, you know, you got mm-hmm. me in this marriage and you ain't giving it up like you used to.
mm-hmm.
So how many notches have your wife dropped or gained since you guys been married in your mind?
I think that you have to put it into categories, though. Because, you know, I don't want to believe that, you know, it's all the categories are bad. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So she may
right.
have she may have stepped up her game in the domestic, or she may have stepped up the game in the financial part, but then dropped
mm-hmm.
somewhere else. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
You know,
right.
I think when you're dating, you kind of look at the way they handle their own household.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you're taking
notes.
How
long do you give them for that, though?
I mean, I don't really know if it takes a long time, man. If you go by and you're hanging out with them and you're dating them and you see how they handle their bills, their own household, what they, you know, how they juggle stuff, you know, that'll give you a clear indication, a somewhat indication of how they are going to be in the marriage and what roles you'll assume.
I don't know. I don't know about that. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, you know, if you know, if you'll know if they're a deadbeat or not.
I think they can camouflage that, though. I mean, I've seen some relationships where, like what you're talking about, they one way when before you get married, and then after they're married, you know, the light went off. And it's like, well,
yeah.
How long was you watching her do the things that she was doing, or was you too busy watching the booty wag by you? You know, because
yeah.
I think that smokescreen of, you know, these other accents, you know, we kind of get distracted by that, and that only allows us to monitor her other things or categories for a little while. And then we think in our mind, well, you know what, I can deal with that. Don't worry about that. Just, I mean, you know, hey, as long as I'm getting it in three times a week, we straight. And I think that the other focuses start coming into it, becoming more clear. You start focusing on the other things after the sex diminishes. And then you're like, wait a minute, she don't cook? it's like now your focus is on the things that should have been focused on before you guys was married, you know. And I seen – go ahead. Hello?
Nobody said anything.
Okay. Yeah, and I think once you start focusing – once you stop focusing on what you desire the most, or once that goes down a little bit or get degraded a little bit, then all these other things that was already there is more present and prevalent in front of your face because it's more clearer now because you don't have anything else to focus on, or your main attraction is now not an attraction anymore. So all these other things, I mean – I had a homeboy, you know, he's like, when he first started talking to this chick, he was like, oh, man, she's just so lovely. She got the most beautiful natural hair I've ever seen on a woman. And, oh, she's just so, she's etiquette and she's this and she's that. And then he had sex with her. And then after he did that, every time he had sex with her, he saw something else that was wrong with her. He said, how's you and your girl doing? Well, you know, I kind of looked at her, and I think makeup does a number on women, man, because you can't really see all these things when they got all that makeup on it. I said, so what's wrong? She's the same person, right? Well, she got all these bumps on her face. I'm like, oh, that's nothing. You know, it's okay, bro. So just a little makeup will cover that up. The next week I asked him, how are your girl doing? How are you and your girl doing? Well, she got these tumors and then these varicose veins, and it just get everything else just gets more clearer as what he desired diminishes. And the same mm-hmm. thing that happens in the marriage, you know, the sex diminishes, the desire for it from her point of view, it begins to diminish, And then once that's not there, you got other things to look at that you say, wait a minute.
Why does her, all of a sudden, sex drive diminish? Explain that to me, because I'm a little foggy in that area. If you was a freak, then you a freak. If you enjoyed it, then how does that diminish? If it's something that you enjoy to do, how does that just diminish?
Well, you can't be a freak all your life. I mean, I used to run a mile and a half in 9 minutes flat. I can't run a mile. I can't do a 9.5 minute mile anymore.
that's funny.
You know? It's different now because, you know.
He not buying it. That brother not buying it.
Not buying it.
Oh, brings up a good point. He brings up a good point. You know, we all were famous when we were little, you know. Get a little older, things change.
Slow down.
What changes? What changes?
Got to back off the pork chop.
Yeah, but this is not a game. It's not competition. I mean,
you got to put it in the same category, though, because your body gets older no matter what. Even Jordan, the best in basketball.
Y'all talking about what age are you talking about now when your body gets older? So you're talking about when you get 70?
No, I'm just talking about like my man said earlier.
So if you get married at 20 and then by 35 your sex drive should diminish? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. I mean, it could. What if it's that? You know, what if it's the kids that's turning her off? What if it's because sometimes women can gain weight and they disgust themselves and they's like, you know, I'm not worthy of. I don't like seeing my body bounce on top of my husband because I'm so big, and I, you know, he can't carry me like he used to carry me, or he don't look at me the same. So, I have to do something about this weight, and she turns herself off. And that kind of cuts it off a little bit. Say, you know, I got to get my weight down. I got to get myself back in shape. And you thinking is what? The only thing you thinking about, why are you not giving them like you used to?
And but now you're thinking like, there's something wrong with you.
Right.
So instead of
you're just asking me for some avenues of why does that diminish?
Sure.
So, you know, these are some of the reasons why that diminishes, you know. If you're going to sit up here and expect her to have babies and get right back into shape, and you know, and not take in that postpartum depression is one of the reasons why she don't want to sleep with anybody. I mean, sleep with you anymore. Then that's kind of like a, you know, it could be considered as selfish, or it could be considered as, you know, hey man, just let her get back on her feet, you know. And then you start comparing her to other women. Hey man, well I seen this internet sensation. She had her baby 8 days later. She was back to flat abs. Can't look at it like that either, because once you start comparing her, you're getting further and further away from another day of making love to your wife.
Yeah, well, y'all should be good on Fridays. You know, y'all should get lucky on Friday. So,
why is that?
It's Valentine's Day.
Here we go with the holidays again. Birthdays, holidays, Christmas,
right,
Father's King, birthday,
day.
Labor Day. Valentine's Day.
Oh, man. Dude, you know, hey, I haven't even thought about Valentine's Day.
What?
Why should I be the only one to think about? Huh? Yeah,
that's a whole other issue right there, buddy.
Trust me, you're not the only one.
Yeah. You got some brothers on here to co-sign with you. I already got my Valentine's plans. I'm just hopefully they don't get snowed out. That's all I'm worried about.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's if anybody got anything else, it's about that time to go into open mic. And everybody can talk. Everybody free to talk if they want to. Talk about anything in open mic. So we're going to shut this show down, and we appreciate you coming to the Married Man Don't Talk show. Tell all your friends and your family to come listen out and join us up. So check our website, householdstress.com, for any upcoming events. We have a couple of things coming up, so please check the website, look up upcoming events tab. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of your night.